Sunshine.
That's cool. I can dig it.
Coming to you from somewhere deep inside Transition Studios, brought to you by your hosts, Roger and Leto. Welcome to Sci-Fi
Rewind. Okay, cool.
I'll just cut this out right here.
All right, and here we go. All right, welcome back to Sci-Fi Rewind. This is our third episode. We got our first guest today. I'm Leto.
I'm Roger. And who are you?
Hey, who's this guy?
Oh, I'm Ryan. How you doing?
And this is Ryan Kelly, our first guest. Ryan and I go way back, all the way back to middle school.
Probably.
Yeah, and we reconnected back in film school here at CSU, Cleveland State.
As adults.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I heard the name. I'm like, I know that name.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, dude.
I think when I first ran into you, you're like, hey, I'm Leto. I'm like, and I never knew you as Leto.
Right.
I knew you as Masile. So right. I was like, oh, cool. Yeah, I know Masile Carabella. He's like, yeah, that's me. And I'm like, oh, wow. Well, it's been 20 years. So
right.
It was pretty interesting, but I still think that's a funny story to tell.
You know how people change their names when, like, you know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it happens in Hollywood a lot too, right?
Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, absolutely. No one goes by their.
Yeah, no.
Gene Simmons has got that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Heim.
Yeah,
is his name Heim. Heim Schwitz or something like that. I think
exactly.
It's something like that.
So I just wanted to like simplify Misael down to Leo.
Hey,
it's just make it easy on
you
everybody.
Do you, pal?
Cool.
Although Masile is a cool name, so. Oh. Can I swear on this? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll probably beep that out.
Yeah, we'll probably censor it.
Fair.
Yeah.
What's your language?
All right, sorry.
But Ryan, I know you as an actor, but you're mainly.
That's great.
Well, I saw that one short you were in. I don't know. It's kind of weird. I think there's like some devil stuff going on or something.
Oh, my goodness. No, that's not acting, pal. That's helping somebody out and just being like, what do you want me to do? Okay, cool. Yeah, my senior year at film school. That was
That was good stuff.
I can't remember whose movie that was, but.
But now you
remember. I remember it though, because I was like, oh, okay.
But you moved on to producing.
Yep.
And you got this big project you're working on now, which sounds pretty awesome. If you want to tell us a little bit about it, or.
I can tell you a little bit. It's just about girls wrestling is what is currently. But yeah, that's I'm directing and producing that documentary. It should be a series, I hope. But I'm also executive producing half of our projects here at Transition, producing Mayor's Race, two other off projects.
Right, I see your name on all the credits when we watch all this.
Everything, all the screens. Yeah. Like and this. Then also trying to make this place operational.
Right.
Smoothly operational.
And
smooth operator.
Tell us about your set experience on the Hollywood films that come into town.
Oh, well, yeah, it's, you know, that's kind of where I cut my teeth. And as far as learning, you know, I was fortunate enough to get, you know, a front row seat to the way a Russo Brothers film works. And, you know, it's a crash course in filmmaking. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity I got, and it's pushed me to where I'm at today.
Awesome. So we actually got like someone that's been on a Hollywood set, knows how all that goes down, saw it with his own eyes. I haven't been on one yet, but
oh, yeah.
I look forward to being on one of these days. And saying,
well, we should do it ourselves. Hopefully we will one day.
I love that idea even more.
Yeah.
I love it.
That's the goal, man.
That's filmmaking.
In fact,
you
let's just
do
stop everything. Let's stop this entire podcast right now. Let's just go do it. Let's just go do it.
I'm a little tired right now, but
I got to finish this one first. But I'm in, though.
But so we do things a little bit instead of like going through the story here.
Sure.
We like
Yeah, I know that you kind of like told me, but I wanted to go into it blind. So
that's perfect. I love it. The bravery. So Roger and I are gonna play executives, blank executives.
Okay.
You're gonna be the filmmaker.
Okay.
Don't have to worry about being the screenwriter because that's a whole different ball of wax. So we're just gonna. You're coming in to pitch us the movie idea.
Oh,
and
great.
We're going to let you know. We're going to ask you questions, and we're going to like see if it makes sense to make this move. And the movie we're going to be talking about today is Sunshine, which is, you know, good old Danny Boyle.
Yes.
Film.
Yes.
And can't wait to get started.
So. I love it. I absolutely love this movie.
Hold on. Do you want some water?
No, I'm okay. I got water.
Okay, good. Welcome to our office.
You love this film, you say? You know all the ins and outs of it?
Mostly. I'd like to think. Well, I know enough about it, I believe.
We're about to test you on that.
Well, we'll see.
We're getting better at this. But.
Yeah, that's all right. I mean, there's probably like little facts I don't know necessarily, but I know a handful, a good decent amount. Mm-hmm. I saw it, I don't know, 3 times in the theater, and it was only in smaller theaters. And
yeah.
I saw it in a place called the Mayan Theater in Denver, Colorado, because that's when I was living in Denver at the time.
Okay.
And I loved it so much, I went back and saw it again. There's a time in like Sunshine and There'll Be Blood and No Country for Old Men were all kind of out around the same time.
Okay.
And all I did was live at the theater watching those three in particular movies. And then Funny Games kind of dropped in there somewhere. And I saw that crazy mess. But yeah, Sunshine, There'll Be Blood, and No Country for Old Men. It was like, I would just go see one like every other day. It was really cool.
Very awesome.
But yeah, I love this movie.
So, okay, we're not in the studio. We're in an office, and we're very busy executives. We got so much stuff on our brains. We want to go to lunch, and you come in, and you got this great idea. So take it away, Ryan.
All right, so this movie... The movie is basically about that the sun is dying and the heat from the sun is not reaching the planet Earth anymore, and the Earth is starting to freeze, which will in turn cause extinction for the human race. So mankind has put together a plan to basically reignite the sun, and they send out a group of astronauts attached to a bomb the size of Manhattan. To basically insert it into the sun and with nuclear fusion, reignite the sun, basically. And the story follows, you know, the 7 astronauts on their journey out there and the psychology of having the entire human race hanging in the balance on their brains and the complexities of them having to deal with, you know, just one or multiple screw-ups that could completely change the course of human history. So the psychology behind that,
and all right,
you know, their opportunity to save mankind.
So it's another stuck in space in a spaceship movie.
Yes. Well, any stuck in space in a spaceship movie is they're stuck in a spaceship because you can't walk outside.
All right. How much money do you think you need?
Oh boy. Man, you're talking about budgets?
Yeah.
I'm just pitching.
So ballpark us.
Budget for this is probably be around...
What are we talking? We talking...
Probably around $40 million.
Okay. Okay.
Because what year is this? This is 2007.
2007. Yeah. $40 million.
So I'm going to say $40 million would right be good. I could use a little bit more, but I might not need it all.
I'm going to check the number real quick. I think you're right on the money, dude.
Yeah. No, he is. All right.
You did your homework.
What are we going to get out of this? How much money are we going to make, do you think?
How much money are you going to make?
Yeah, that's really the name of the game. First question. We're going to make some money on this
one?
What's our competition?
I'm not exactly sure what the competition would be, but at the same point, I think this is an evergreen subject because it's science fiction, it's outer space, it resonates with the entire world. So you would have international. This would go international as well. It'd probably do well over in China and Europe and
got
stuff.
So it's environmental not just, type issues.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's not necessarily a completely domestic film. So you'd probably do well internationally.
But can I just throw a quick thing? You say the sun is drying out.
Yes.
We didn't do anything to cause the sun to dry out, right?
Nope.
So it's nothing we could do with greenhouse gas. It's got nothing to do with greenhouse gases then. So it's not just like
strictly the sun.
No shame on you for throwing out all that plastic on us then. No. We got that. We don't have that message going.
And also, I got another
question. I'm sure that doesn't help.
Yeah.
I also have another question. You said that they're dropping a bomb into the sun.
Correct.
I've seen that before.
Yeah, I'm thinking of one movie, The Core?
The Core.
The Core.
The Core.
How is this?
They drop a bomb into the Earth. That's completely different.
So,
this is the sun.
How is that original? How are we going to make an original movie here with the Core
being... Well, it's not necessarily original in the regards of why they're doing what they're doing, but the plot of the astronauts and the psychology of what they're going to deal with on their way out there. This physicist in the movie is basically the one person who everything falls on top of him, like the entire weight of humanity and how this guy deals
to one person.
Yeah. How this guy deals with, it's kind of with the weight of humanity. That's you know, there's a lot of different kind of side stories, but the main stories I'm going to
talk about side stories. Let's talk about that love story.
There's no love story in this movie.
What?
There's no love story in this movie.
That's like screenwriting 101. You got to have that.
Okay. There's tension a little bit, but
tension
I think the psychology, the action.
So this is a science movie for science people.
No, not so much a general audience. There's still adventure. There's still drama. There's still horror. There's elements of a lot of different films.
Just no romance
genre.
So it's not a date movie. I mean, they're not going to get the, you know.
Well, it depends. What kind of dates are you going on?
You know, like, what do you?
You know, whoever your date is, if he or she likes science fiction, then they're going to love this movie.
You know, speaking of dates, movies, and things like that,
sure.
People are going to want to know who's involved. They're going to want to know who to look at and be attracted
right.
to.
Who are the good looking people in this one?
Yeah.
Well, Cillian Murphy is attached. He's the lead. You'll know him from 28 Days Later.
Yeah, connection.
Yeah, so that's Danny Boyle connection.
Very good.
There's an up and coming actor named Chris Evans.
Wasn't he in Fantastic Four?
He is in Fantastic Four.
And the other movie,
Not Another Teen Movie.
That's where I know him from.
Yep. Michelle Yeoh,
is he a bad guy?
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She's a very well-known actress, and she's huge in China.
Okay. So we got Britain.
Rose Byrne will be the lead female. She is an up-and-coming actress.
Okay.
All right.
Another British actress, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Does she play a Brit in the movie that you got in mind?
She can. I don't think she does, but she can if she wanted to. I mean, the collection of scientists are very diverse.
My question is, like, what's the country that's sending these people out into the sun? Like, who's... You say it falls on one man, but, like, what...
I think it's. I would imagine it would be a collective.
A collective.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, the cast is very diverse. So I would imagine that most space agencies have somebody, whoever their pro is.
Their top echelon people.
Absolutely.
So one of each, kind of like major space country that can go out to outer space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That should work good in international. You know, like if you got one person to root for from your country, right?
Absolutely.
Africa in there, right, too, right? Africa? African nations? I mean...
I don't think there are any African nations, actually.
No. Well, I mean...
Nations represented.
We can't get everyone, you know.
So, like, Europe, United States, China?
It would be China, I think Japan. Actually, that's not true. I believe the psychologist is African.
Oh!
So, if I remember correctly, yes.
Well, you check that box. Good.
Good to know.
Sound like a real executive now.
I'm sorry, we're trying to role play here as best we can.
Where do you plan to shoot?
Yeah. We'll talk about these sets. It sounds expensive.
We'll shoot in England at Pinewood.
Oh, Pinewood. Okay. Do we got people there that can give us a good deal, you think, Roch?
I mean, it's down the street from Danny Boyle.
Is that Union? That's Union, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, boy. So we got breaks and everything. Ouch.
Oh, yeah. But it's England. So I don't know. It's
London, England.
That's where he wants to shoot. That's where the director wants to shoot.
Okay. And how's he doing? He's coming off of something pretty good, right?
28 days? I believe. 28 days later.
So he's proven he can finish a film.
Yes.
He's not going to flake out on us.
No.
Good. Is he drinking a little too much?
I'm not entirely sure.
Let's hope not. We need to keep him sober. We need to make the see it through.
he's obviously, Danny Boyle is a very well-respected director in this realm.
Yeah.
He's completed a couple films that have done very, very well, such as, you know, Train Spotting, Lifeless Ordinary.
Mm, now you're hitting some good stuff here.
Later and,
yes. Very moody stuff.
I know
stuff.
This is a passion project of his. So.
Okay. Has he done sci-fi before then?
No. This is his first delve into sci-fi that he really...
Do you think his style kind of works with sci-fi?
I think he doesn't really have a technically... I mean, I think... It can.
Mm-hmm.
In his filmmaking, he's kind of been all over the place. So yeah.
Kind of master.
He definitely knows drama, though. Okay. That's for sure. He knows his drama, and he knows how to portray horror-ish themes. So I think he would do well in it.
Any kind of crazy special effects? I'm talking like big budget. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're
like, I'm talking like explosions.
And you're heading towards the sun.
Yeah, they're not going to go outside, are they? Because that's going to cost an arm and a leg.
Oh, hey, you know, stuff.
And we're talking zero G here. This is
zero G.
We're talking about the ropes, and that's going to be. You know, I'm thinking of stunt doubles here.
They're going to have to. They're going to have to do some spacewalks.
Wow.
You know, stuff malfunctions.
But their stuff's going to look normal. We don't have to like completely build a new suit or anything, right?
Oh no, this is a very special suit that has to be made if you're going towards the sun.
Oh boy.
So
I just see dollar signs. But I'm not thrilled about the $40 million. I'm telling you that right now. I need to figure it. I need to be sold on something. So we have an unoriginal like. story. We have a lot of special effects.
Which movie do you think
up and coming actors?
You say it's like the core?
Yeah, it's
not like the core.
The core
stays within planet Earth. You are outside of planet Earth.
Yeah, but the same idea, using a nuclear bomb to save the day. That's
I don't even know.
It's probably going to get hotter the closer you get to your objective, right?
Is that what happens in the core? I don't know. I've never seen the core.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course, yeah. I mean, they start melting and everything goes bad.
Oh.
What happens?
There's a shield, clearly a solar shield, because they're heading towards the sun, not the core of the Earth, which is a completely different ball. Okay. Ballgame.
Okay, cool. So there's a shield. Does that shield go bad?
I don't know. I mean, I have to read the script. I mean, I would imagine that there are probably hiccups on their journey.
Talk about the first hiccup. Give me the first hiccup.
What's the first hiccup?
Did anybody try this before? Is this the first time we've done this?
Done what?
Tried to go to the sun and restart it with the bomb.
Yes, I believe so.
Are you certain?
Are you
no,
absolutely certain?
I'm not certain.
If we looked
in the modern age, probably.
No. In the story that we're talking about that you're trying to pitch to us. Is it the first time that
No. They are the second. They are the second attempt, because the first attempt did not complete their mission. Okay. Stopped somewhere close to the sun, but they don't know why.
So
they can't wait. To figure it out.
Okay.
It takes 7 years for them to get back. So
ouch, that's a long time.
Yeah,
to build a new ship and all that.
I think they were building a second one just as a backup, as the first one is launched and sent out, and then they don't hear, so they send out the second ship, and it takes a while for them to get there.
You know what I'm thinking?
Yeah,
Event Horizon.
It is very similar to Event Horizon.
Yeah.
Now the difference between Event Horizon. Well, first of all, they're going the opposite way.
True.
So Event Horizon heads out towards Uranus and Neptune.
Yeah, yep, correct.
And Event Horizon is they are literally, oh my gosh, what's the name of the ship in Event Horizon? The Event Horizon
Lewis and Clark.
Is basically in orbit of Neptune.
Yeah, it's called Event Horizon, I think.
It went somewhere and then came back.
It went to hell.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I don't want to give that part away.
We're going to spoil these movies have been out for a long time.
Okay. So yeah,
we're not worried about spoilers.
So the Event Horizon leaves and comes back, goes to hell and comes back. Yeah. Well, they don't know that, but it shows up. So then they send people out like a rescue mission. This is not a rescue mission. This is another attempt.
Okay.
They're not supposed to, you know, there's no point in what their objective is to see what happened to the other crew. They're strictly sent out to reignite the sun.
Okay. Well, I'm a fan of the Alien franchise. Is there anything that sneaks upon board and, you know, causes problems?
No. I mean, sort of, but that's up to interpretation, I believe. I mean, you have to read the script, I guess.
I don't want to read. I'm too busy to read. I need you to tell me. I write the checks. I don't read. I'm sorry. I'm too busy.
There could be. I mean,
okay. 40 million.
How can we fit?
You're asking me. So, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
You're asking me questions of things that actually happen in the movie. So it's taking away from me actually pitching it to you. So it's like you already know what's going to happen. So you're asking me like.
Yeah, I'm trying to softballs.
I know, but I know you don't need to do that because I can get to those things.
Okay.
But it's all right.
All right, we got it.
Yes, somebody does come on board.
Yeah.
Because one of, like I said, there are a couple hiccups, and
yeah.
One of the hiccups. The first hiccup, as you were speaking, what's the first thing that happened is that, you know, they catch a transmission from the ship that was they never heard from after they get past around Mercury.
Yeah.
Which this would be the first movie where people actually make eye contact with Mercury, which is a pretty cool thing to think about.
Can we have aliens come out of Mercury?
No, maybe? No Mercury aliens.
Oh, boy. Just that lost opportunity.
Okay. There's nothing. What can live on Mercury? It's ridiculous.
I don't know.
It's way too hot.
Life lives everywhere.
I don't know about that.
Maybe there's some sort of hidden like oasis. Yeah, of, like,
if we pass that, I can see like a door opening up and maybe some spaceships flying out of it. And it's like, what are you doing in our part of the solar system?
Hey, get off of Mercury.
What's the big idea?
Green, little cigar. Hey, get out of Mercury. What do you do?
Would he be down?
Yeah, like I said, the hiccup happens and they find out that the other ship is still kind of just sitting out there and they send it their distress beacon and they try to figure out if it's worth it for them to go meet up with the first ship to see if the bomb is still intact because two bombs. That's where the psychology lands on the physicist because mm-hmm. basically the entire mission objective is altered because of the problem of basically math.
Okay.
Math basically changes the probability of one bomb versus two, which you'd always want to have two shots instead of one, as any physicist or mathematician would tell you.
Right.
So they divert from the mission to go find the first ship, which was very close to where they were going anyways, in relative terms to being as close as to the sun as you can get. And yeah, and the captain is still on that ship, and he has killed the entire crew, and wants to be the last man alone with God because he knows the Earth is dying, and his objective is to be the last person alive. And when the other ship shows up, he says, well, I'm not going to be the last person alive because these jerks just showed up, and they're trying to save humanity, so got to get rid of them. So he hops.
Why does he want to get rid of humanity? Does he have a reason?
I think he just... his reason, I mean, obviously he's clearly lost his mind being out, you know, in deep space and feeling as they get closer to the sun and they can, there's a observation deck that can filter the sunlight. And I guess the closer you get to the sun, the more of a blanket it feels. And it's almost like encompassing of like being held by God is kind of the feeling that you get, and you'll see as the movie goes on that other people get more attached to that as well, and you can see kind of where this pilot of the last ship kind of the trajectory from another crew member is kind of on that same trajectory. So
they were on the same track to get to the sun, and they kind of like passed them.
No, like there's a guy, there's a crew member on the new ship that literally comes in. He realizes the feeling of the more sun, and he starts to take on more and more sun, and it starts to burn him and stuff like that. You see it as the movie goes on.
Ooh.
But feel like this was kind of the same path that the original pilot went on to the point where he cracked. So
Event Horizon.
Well, I've been hearing talks of this in old captain.
But there's very, but I mean, this is not, it's not, this is Event Horizon is clearly a horror film. This is not a horror film.
This doesn't have any kind of horror elements.
It has a little bit of horror element. Obviously, this guy has lost his mind, so it's more psychology than it is horror. Straight up, I mean, nobody's going to hell and coming back. This guy's just sitting on a ship for 6 years.
Without food.
So,
I don't know. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, he does have food because they grow food on board.
So, from what I've been hearing about this old captain, it sounds like...
Man, I know you guys are going to set me up like this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is...
We're just talking about the movie, but go ahead.
Hey, you're a guinea pig, man.
We're testing the waters.
Yeah,
here.
We're
assessed. CEO of this company is going to walk out of this podcast if you guys go at him like this.
We're going to lose our jobs, Lito.
Hey, then we'll just do this from our basements.
No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Sounds like old Captain was a crazy religious man. Is he going to be a comically crazy religious man in this movie?
No.
Okay. Are you sure?
The captain?
The captain. The old captain.
The one that you're saying causes problems.
Yes.
He realizes that he could be the last person because the Earth is dying. And he just realizes he could be the last person alone with God. And that's as far as I think the religion goes.
Okay. The religious stuff?
Mm-hmm. He just thinks that he's the last person alone with God.
Okay.
Which is a weird thing to think about, I guess. But
which God?
His God, whoever it is.
Okay. He doesn't specifically say.
He says God.
It's just God in general.
Okay. And there's...
Wasn't there a sun god? Ra, wasn't that? Is that the one?
They would sacrifice hearts or something.
Yeah. I wonder if that's the god he's...
Yeah, this is a non-dominational.
Okay.
Denominational god.
Good. Good. I love it. Yes. We're not going to turn anybody off. This is good. All right. Anything else, Raj? You got any more questions?
I think I'm good.
I think I'm on the fence on this one.
I'm on the fence too, but you know what? I'm willing to take a shot here.
I believe in this guy.
Oh yeah, I believe in this guy. He's passionate.
Hey, if you could, if I actually prepared for this, you know, could you imagine?
Oh yeah. This is how I felt when I had to pitch.
Yeah, and that's the way I felt when I had to pitch. So don't worry about it.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
We started this. I know you told me that, but like it never resonated. So I just have to the next one I'll come in. I'll
kick our asses.
Yeah, I'm gonna destroy you.
That's good.
Okay. You know what? I'm willing to take a shot at this guy. I'm certain. You know, he probably
gonna be a hit, man.
He probably wants $40 million. I'm certain we won't lose money on this.
Well, if it's
you're not gonna spend a lot on principal photography because we'll use a lot of sets will be pretty quick and there's only it's going to be a lot of CGI. There's going to be a lot of post-production, but which is where you're going to drop a lot of your money.
And the soundtrack is going to be pretty stellar?
Soundtrack. So we have, as a composer, his name is...
John Murphy.
John Murphy. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I always go to John Williams for some reason. But John Murphy is going to score this, and he's played me a little bit of what he's going to be using, and I really think it's going to push the movie. I think the score of this movie is going to be used in commercials for years to come.
Oh, yes.
I like that.
Every time you hear it in a commercial, you'll be like, dang, that's from Sunshine. It's so good in the part that it's in.
Well, let's make sure to get those royalties. and then the screenwriter.
Yes.
What do you got in mind?
Oh, my God.
Alex Garland?
Alex Garland, yes.
Yeah. And he's...
I worked with him before, so...
Yeah?
The director and the screenwriter have worked together before.
Okay,
and
cool.
They are, this is, like I said, it's very much a passion project for the both of them.
All right. I don't think...
I think they've worked together.
Yeah, no, they did 28 Days.
That's what I thought.
And then he wrote Ex Machina, too.
Yes.
So...
He did write Ex Machina.
Yeah. So, definitely in the sci-fi. So, that's
stuff.
Good. Yeah.
Sorry.
No, we're good. And then... All right,
you know
cool.
what? Just because of that, just because you're swearing, we're dropping the project.
That's all right. Fox Searchlight wants it.
Get out of our office.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fox Searchlight already asked. I was just trying to up their point.
It's
the value.
It's a pass. It's a hard pass. Fox Searchlight. Okay.
Fox Searchlight's got it.
Yeah. I'll see it when it happens.
All right. Okay. Fair. That's fair.
That's good. All right.
He's also got this other project, Danny, does called... Slumdog Millionaire, I think it's going to be a hit as well. So
that one?
We'll see.
Okay, we'll see.
Yeah, it's a pretty ambitious thing, but I think it's really heartfelt. I think the script is beautiful, so it might do well.
I think it
might do well.
Let's wish him luck.
Yes, I'll let him know if you said that. Thank you.
Good luck.
All right.
Let's move on to the initial thoughts.
Ryan, why did you make us watch this horribly depressing movie?
It's depressing? You think it's depressing?
I thought it was super depressing.
Oh, really?
Everyone dies horribly.
Yeah.
Well, I think I think why I like it is because about halfway through the movie, mm-hmm. they know they're not going to come back.
Oh yeah,
like it's mm-hmm. over. When the garden goes, that's it.
Yeah.
Like they all know, unless the other ship has some way of getting back, this is it. It's a one-way ticket, and they all still kind of. There's no like feeling of dread, like mm-hmm. well, besides the guy who messed up, besides a Trey,
yeah, Trey,
who literally like, you know, it could have been, that could have been anything, but like, I love that it's as far-fetched as the idea is, and mm-hmm. as you know, how improbable something like this would be,
yeah.
it's still set in that realistic like. This is it. Like we have to finish this to save everybody, and our lives are not worth the lives of everybody else.
It's the Star Trek refcon needs as many outweighing needs as a few scenario.
Yeah.
My thought is, if they would have just listened to Chris Evans, mm-hmm. stayed on True. Course,
absolutely,
none of that would have happened.
And
who I could say
everyone would still be alive.
You're absolutely right.
If I could,
and they even say it in the yeah. movie
a couple times.
Oh, yeah. yeah.
Chris Evans needs to play more hard asses.
I think he's brilliant in this movie. Oh, yeah. Like I think
he was
like,
my
his
favorite.
Performance is the most underrated performance in right. this film, because he literally is like he's right the entire time.
The entire
but
time. He makes the call. The captain's got to go.
Yep,
he's in the wrong spot.
Yep,
but didn't even have to go there. The movie could have totally been avoided.
Yeah,
if
every downfall that the crew has could have been avoided had they just listened to the one guy who was right the entire time.
And I think
that's human flaw.
That's my thing. Yeah. My initial reaction is like, mm-hmm. I think what happens here is like people don't have, they kind of like fall into their emotions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They let emotions dictate the course of actions.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just to even get to that part where the physicist does the math and make sure they have two bombs,
mm-hmm.
like they're all going on emotion trying to save that crew, the mm-hmm. crew, the other from the other
right.
Icarus.
Right. Icarus one.
Like they. That's what gets them on.
Well,
on track
they're kind of yeah, but they are definitely more attached to like, if we can send two bombs in, it's better than one.
Never would have ran into the
if the guy doesn't bring that up, yeah. the psychologist guy or whatever, the you know
yeah.
psychiatrist
mm-hmm. yeah. psychiatrist
I'm, yeah
just let's refer to him
he's the one who kind of sets them on that kind of like mm-hmm. thought process
for sure
fine
I have to look up his name now because I don't want to
here I got it psychiatrist is
but yeah his and his kind of
Cliff Curtis
right.
But what's his character's name in the movie?
His Cyril.
Cyril, yes. So, yeah, so Cyril's kind of, which is funny because, you know, there's a movie that was released a couple years later called Interstellar where mm-hmm. the decision they make is not based on that feeling.
And right.
It's based on, no, this is, we have the better shot following Dr. Mann, and they go to Matt Damon's world instead right. of following her, what she felt, which ended up being the right one. So... which is another great movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then, so I think that what happens in this movie, to me, I can only watch this movie once. Yeah. I tried to watch it again and it kind of fell apart on me.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I'm like right off the rip. I mean, I didn't know it was going to end in like a big, like a monster movie at the end, kind of like a,
with the captain,
yeah, with the ex-captain. I didn't think it was going to end like that. I didn't see that coming the first time.
I will say, at the time that this movie came out, you know, it was kind of I was kind of caught up in a lot of what was happening with the space program and how they were shutting down the space shuttle and they were retiring it and
yeah.
stuff. And I was a big fan of that. And it was kind of like it was kind of like the escape, like the outer space escape for mm-hmm. me. So
right.
that's why I love this movie. You know, way more than most people.
No,
so,
yeah.
Which is fine. But
and I'm saying I loved it the first time I watched it.
Mm-hmm. The first time I watched it too, like it's like the first act is brilliant.
Yeah.
Until they go outside and the same thing happens in Event Horizon where the guy goes outside. And then at that point I was just like, okay. And then the captain came back. And I was like, kind of like the second half of it falls apart because of that. And it's just like, it didn't really need it. Like
yeah.
it could have gone without the other captain and still been just as terrifying.
Yeah, all I could think throughout this entire film was, did the previous captain pass a psyche eval? Like, he clearly sounded crazy the first time.
You
know, like,
put somebody in space for five years.
Claustrophobic. And
he's like, you can't quantify that.
You just see that first message. It's like, he sounds crazy.
Yeah.
Like,
the saving grace in the end of the film, you know, besides the fact that this guy is, you know, literally falling apart, is, you know, the emotion of him trying to separate the bomb and the music playing, and he trips, and like, when I was, you know, in the theater, that was like, you're like stuck, like your body like couldn't move, like, get up,
was,
like, come on.
His tension,
like,
suspense,
he's yelling and there's running out of oxygen, and you're just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy.
The camera angles inside that suit are so claustrophobic, and it was so uncomfortable.
That's I think that was their goal. Then, you know, then he gets to the bomb and he sets it off, and he's standing, like, that last shot of him standing between the sun and the nuclear reaction of the it's just him in between it, and he just reaches out and touches, like, the surface of the sun. That's
amazing stuff.
It's a crazy thing to even think about. I mean, there's like four or five different points in that movie that are just they're so small, like the Mercury thing, like, when they fly, they're like, ladies and gentlemen, Mercury,
right?
And you just look at, they're all just like, we're the first people to lay eyes on this planet, like to look directly at it, not through a telescope. Like, no one in our lifetime we'll ever look at Mercury.
No, we can't get that close.
Maybe Icarus 1 did. We're the second people to look
maybe
at
Icarus
1. Second one to look at Icarus.
But like, Mercury. You know, you didn't see the Icarus 1 look at it, but that's kind of the emotion they relay is like,
what is it?
It's never.
Who is Icarus? Is that the one who flew too close to the sun?
Oh, boy,
there's the.
I imagine the people developing the ship were probably just going like, yeah, let's just name this Icarus.
What was the name of the ship, that the rescue ship in Event Horizon?
Lewis and Clark.
Yes, thank you.
It was so weird seeing Cillian Murphy, because I watched Peaky Blinders. Okay. It was so weird seeing Cillian Murphy with such long hair, especially that gross little ponytail he has.
But Chris Evans with long hair.
Weird. But then he shaves it immediately. Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, that's Chris Evans.
It's crazy.
What's crazy, the other crazy thing about that is that cast.
Oh yeah.
Three of those people have been in our major Marvel Cinematic Universe people.
Oh, yeah. You got Chris Evans, you got Wong.
Wong.
And you got Rose Byrne, who played
So four.
Yeah.
Michelle Yeoh is Shang-Chi's aunt.
All right.
Yeah. And then I know Mark Strong from that's kind of like new Bond stuff. Kind of happening.
I know that Icarus 2 guy, Icarus 2 captain, he's played a bunch of stuff.
Kaneda?
But he was like, recently he was Scorpion in the new Mortal Kombat.
That's right, he was, yes.
And he also,
Cliff Curtis is in like 50 different things.
And he also appeared in our friend's favorite movie.
Kingsman.
Kingsman.
Yeah, Mark Strong.
Strong. And Kaneda. Kaneda? He also appeared in our friend's favorite movie, Army of the Dead.
Oh, nice. Wow.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Love Army of the Dead. Okay.
And Leto loves it. Leto loves Army of the Dead, apparently.
It's a little movie. Yeah, it was fun. It was cool stuff. So like, I think you've already talked about your nostalgia with the film. You said you went in Denver and you saw it. My nostalgia was I watched Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah.
And I was like, awesome director.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what else you got?
Yeah.
And I'm like, sci-fi? Yeah. Slumdog Millionaire director? Yeah. I'm on board. Love the film. I'm like, why have I never heard of this movie? What happened? Like, how come? I mean, I went through life and I love sci-fi and I didn't know about this movie until after Slumdog Millionaire. Yeah. Like, how come it got lost? That's not a question to you. I'm just saying, like,
I mean, I
don't remember it being in a movie theater. I don't remember seeing commercials.
It was a very limited release in the United States, I believe.
Yeah.
The Mayans equivalent to like the Cedarly or the Capitol.
Oh, that's where it went.
So it was like those
artsy theaters. Okay.
And honestly, I think, I mean, I imagine that the preview of the trailer, the trailer for Sunshine is phenomenal.
Okay.
And it literally sells you on the movie. And I think I saw the trailer somewhere, you know, as they were getting ready to release this. And it was like, I need to watch this movie. This movie looks amazing.
I would have totally watched it.
And then
does the trailer use Adagio in D minor? Does it use that song?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't remember. I probably have to rewatch that, but mm-hmm. I remember there's a couple movies that the trailer that gets you, and that was one of them.
And it appears in shows at certain points, right? Because if I could go into my nostalgia just for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have absolutely no nostalgia for the movie itself.
Okay.
But I do know that I do know Adagio D minor is just like a big, almost joke song at this point.
Oh, is it like a Wilhelm Scream type of thing?
Yeah, it's like you need a big dramatic moment. This happened in Wonder Woman 1984.
And then you use the same music?
Yeah, you just use the same music.
Yeah, I hear it all the time.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought I heard something.
I had never really heard it.
I was just like, I was watching the movie, and I was like, oh, it's that song. And then I looked up, this is the origin of that song. This is where it came from.
Nice.
And so I was like, okay, oh my God, this spawned the meme.
Yeah, go ahead, put it on.
Yeah, go ahead. My nostalgia is that this movie spawned a meme song. It's like you need a sad yet also almost inspiring moment. Let's get Adagio in D minor. Nice. Wonder Woman does that exact same thing, and it's hysterical. 1984. Wonder Woman 1984 does
it. Yeah, it's in a bunch of stuff now. But like, man, when it hits in that movie for the first time, you watch it, it's perfect. And that's, I will always antiquate that song with that scene. It's very actually cool. In the movie like twice. It's
cool.
And the
two most
intense moments.
Two most important moments it could be in.
Yeah.
The most well-used moments.
Absolutely.
But
that's good directing.
If I could
absolutely.
If I could still just add like a little thing. I always find it weird how gravity is portrayed in these films.
Yeah.
I think the Stuck in a Spaceship movie that I was mentioning, the best movie to get to understand how gravity should work is 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Yeah,
you use magnet boots or something.
Yeah,
because there's no way we're gonna be able to create artificial gravity, and yet somehow they just keep going like, we just create artificial gravity.
We're just gonna walk around unless we're somewhere else. Yeah, it is definitely interesting that but I think if they could figure out how to strap a bomb to the back of a ship and blow take it to the sun and blow it up, they could figure out how to do artificial gravity. Maybe they had those boots on. I don't know. It moves pretty quickly in that movie. Things move pretty quickly for them to have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
Magnet boots.
Now that I think about it. So the shield is like basically in front of the ship the entire time.
Yep.
Making sure that they don't get hurt.
Correct.
But by the end, when they release the bomb and it's going straight towards the sun, isn't the shield still on the bomb?
So when they detach, there's a whole nother shield that was behind the bomb.
Okay.
You see it like when it detached to go to the other one, you see it. It's like a looks like an umbrella kind of, and it turns it when they turn, and then when it detaches at the end and the bomb goes into the sun. And it kind of turns, like they don't go straight back because nobody's piloting the ship at that point.
Yeah.
And it turns and you see the whole thing and it's the first thing that gets lit up.
Okay. You were talking about how the old captain wanted to be with God or something.
Yes.
I almost had the impression that the captain was just waiting for another ship to come because he had the SOS ready.
Yeah, that's the one part about it that is...
I think he was actually...
I don't know that he set that off, or maybe somebody else did, and because you couldn't hear it,
or he left it on, he didn't know.
Yeah,
that's how I made it.
I'm almost interpreting that he was like, more people are going to come, and they're going to try and stop the sun from.
Maybe, but
I mean,
the first thing he says when Kappa finds him in the sunroom of the one is, "Are you an angel?" Because he thinks that he's dead.
So. I suppose Captain is my least favorite subplot in this film.
Oh, is it? Absolutely.
Yes.
Like I said, I've reimagined this movie about 50 times without the captain in it.
Oh, yeah.
With like five different ways they could have gone around that.
I don't think we need to tear up the movie.
Oh, yeah. No. I think there's still plenty of good in the film.
Absolutely. So do you know any behind the scenes stories? Like, this is our next thing we talk about. You know any? You
just mean? A couple. I know that like Danny Boyle, and why do I keep remembering?
Alex Garland.
I know this is like a very big passion project of them.
Yeah.
That they really wanted to do a sci-fi film, and that Alex had wrote this like pretty cool script, and they took a long time to rewrite it to get it the right way that they wanted it, and there was something along the line, and when he pitched this originally, whatever studio he pitched it to was like, all right, yeah, we'll let you do that after you do this.
Oh, and, one of those deals.
So he had to do, I can't remember what movie it was, but.
To Danny Boyle?
Yeah.
Oh, was it Trainspotting?
No.
Yeah, I'm missing.
It wasn't 28. He didn't do the sequel to 28 Days Later, did he?
No, it was something else.
No, that
was somebody else.
Well, before Sunshine, there was Millions.
Might have been Millions, the kid one.
Yes. Yeah. No.
So he did that one that's what I heard. It might may not be true. I wasn't in the room. So I think I had
Yeah, so you do one for us, and then you can do
one. Yeah, that happens a lot. So.
Okay.
I think I had a
Millions isn't a bad movie.
Oh, no, I just...
Pretty fun.
No, what I got was, you know, it's like, from what I was hearing, it's like one of those movies where it's almost you're kind of forced to do it to do another thing you like. And then I think I had a judge a book by its cover moment, because I looked at the poster and I was just like, oh god, that one looks kind of cheap. Then I looked it up and it's like, okay, people seem to like it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's decent.
Yeah.
Raj, do you have any stories or?
Well,
I don't. Really,
I mean,
have any
I guess my biggest behind the scenes story is what we were talking about. It's the. Just Adagio in D minor, just becoming absurdly popular.
Right. Yeah, it really bumps me out when I hear it in like commercials and stuff, and I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I'd just be repeating what's on Wikipedia, but it's pretty cool that he got the crew together, you know, kind of did some stuff to kind of make them feel like they're part of a group, and you know, they're a group, and so that was kind of cool. Like when I watched. Memphis Belle, the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
They ran them through some training. Yeah. To kind of build that crew mentality, you know, and you guys kind of.
Memphis Belle. I got to watch that again. Yeah. That's a great movie. That's very underrated.
That really scared them.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. I just found something. Mm. Boyle originally included romantic subplots, including a sex scene between the characters Kappa and Cassie in the ship's oxygen garden.
Oh.
Yeah, and he took it out because he's like, it doesn't fit the movie.
Yeah, it's like, who cares? It's about emotion versus.
Think about it now. Like, after seeing the movie, it doesn't fit.
Right.
It would have been weird.
I almost think the captain subplot doesn't fit.
Yeah. I mean, kind of maybe, I don't know. The Titanic movie, I mean, was it about the sinking ship or was it about the
characters?
The love story to me.
For sure.
Helped. And maybe this could have helped if there was a little bit of something.
Well, you know what happens with the Titanic, so you got to talk about something else.
Yeah,
because you already know what's going to happen, so you have to build that. With this, you don't know what's going to happen, so it's like there's kind of an undertone between them.
Yeah, between the
but
two.
But it
yeah.
never really. I like that it never really kind of comes to fruition.
I don't know.
It leaves you like, were they kind of together? Like, because they kind of act like it sometimes.
They were like kind of like the last two.
Yeah.
Well, no, Chris Evans.
And they're together in the room when it goes off course and writes itself. And
oh yeah, apparently I'm looking at there's an article where it's just like. As it says, writing and scientific inaccuracy. So apparently there's some scientific problems with the film.
Oh, but, I mean, of course.
But this goes on for so long.
Neil deGrasse Tyson going to stand like, I can't shoot it in the sun. That's
We're not trying to like be like, no, that's the wrong science.
I know when he wrote it, I know a lot of the stuff he did do a lot of like true to life research on specific things.
My main question.
Can't get it all right. I mean, there's no way. Unknown.
This might not be a question for you guys. Can the sun really like dry up like that? Or
yes.
When I remember Earth science, I thought the sun got bigger as it got older. But
I think it does. But I think it when they dies, it just kind of it burns out. It's just like a ball of fire, so it'll just burn out.
That's something I kept thinking
about.
That's scary. That was.
I don't think it'll ever happen in our lifetimes, obviously. So. But I mean,
that was something.
You look up in the sky, and every star you see is basically a sun.
I mean, we just take every day for granted, you know, on Earth that sun's going to be there. You know what I mean? This is the scary part of the movies. Like, oh no, there's going to be a day when that's not going to be the case.
Yeah.
Like,
but as I was watching this film, and you know, Earth is freezing. It's a snow planet, basically.
Yeah.
All I could think of was. As if that had actually happened,
right?
Like in real life, like it's not gonna happen. If anything, it's more likely that we're gonna just burn up.
And there's times, you know, where it's forgotten that's even like a thing that's happened. Like the Earth is frozen winter. It says it at the beginning, and you're like, oh okay. And you just kind of put that aside, and you're like. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, everybody's gonna die if they don't do this right. They don't get this. So then he says it later on in the movie. He's like, "This is our last best chance. Like, they're not building another one of these."
Mm-hmm. That leads me to our next spot. Like, what do you think the filmmakers were trying to say with this film?
Sacrifice emotions in order to achieve a goal. Like your emotions make you weak.
Okay. That's pretty good. I'm going to kind of build on that and say that you should have some sort of oversight in a way, because they had no, like they passed this threshold where they couldn't communicate back with command, and they were on their own, and they shouldn't have made those decisions that they made without consulting. You know, home base.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they couldn't have, that's awesome how they cut that out. It's a great, great way because, like, to kind of, like, you know, make that happen, that they couldn't talk to anybody, which is kind of weird. Like, they didn't talk to, like, home base at all, by the way.
No.
They were in a dead zone.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. They used the plot to kind of, like, help that. But, like, I felt like we were in the spaceship. But like, there's a whole planet, 7 billion people, and like we've only like got 6 or 7 people to focus on. I felt like it was like way small.
And you know,
the scale was. I didn't feel like the magnitude of their mission.
Right, because they put you in the room with them. That's
all. And they weren't talking back. I mean, they were sending messages. Like the other people. So I mean, that's kind of a cool thing. You don't have to pay a lot of actors, which you know, if you're thinking like an executive, that's yes, that would have been a cool thing to mention. Like. You only got to pay like 7-8 actors.
Yeah.
Total. But I just didn't feel the weight. Like Armageddon, they cut back and forth because it's closer.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Back and forth to the control room, to this thing, to the spaceship, to the asteroid. Yeah. I mean, you just feel the whole world. They cut all over the, and then like there's nothing.
They lose the comms anyways.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I know. They lose the comms. Didn't. But I think that would have. But I think like the feeling like you shouldn't make these decisions that affect the entire world to try to save a few people.
I also think like the one thing that really bugs me about it is like there, if this had been a normal thing, if this was a real like thing, there would definitely be a contingency plan. What happens if you find the first ship?
Yeah.
There's definitely going to be some kind of playbook for what happens if they find the first ship.
Yeah. Oh my God. I couldn't help but think to myself when the ship's oxygen, you know, supply, you know, when the whole garden, oxygen garden goes out, I thought, couldn't you have made like a backup plan for that? Couldn't you have thought like, okay, we lose our oxygen garden. Let's have another one just in case.
Sure. Because
we never know what's going to happen out there.
Right.
Exactly. That's another thing. There's like that kind of like, there's like a Buddha scene when, what's her name? The
Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah. Michelle Yeoh.
She's holding the plant.
After she got stabbed.
Yep.
And she's got like the little tiny plant kind of like in her palm. And she's kind of like sitting up, you know, crisscross applesauce.
Yeah. Which is weird.
Because I thought she was like dead.
There's also a lot of camera choices that he makes that are kind of like,
Do you think he's saying something like Buddha-ish?
Oh, like, for sure. Like life finds a way kind of thing.
Something. Like, or just like.
Life finds a way.
I mean, faith is all about having faith, I guess. Yeah. And like letting higher up things be in control and kind of not
I honestly believe that's a bad edit.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
And he stabs her in the back she kind of yells and falls and is down like flat.
Yeah.
And then they go back to her later as the ship is kind of falling apart before they suck all the everything out of it. And she's sitting there like that.
Yeah.
And it's very different because she clearly dies after he stabs her. And then she's sitting up later. It's like, I don't think he like lifts her back up and sets her up nicely. Like, well, I just don't see that happen.
Well, I mean, as you know, in filmmaking, everything's intentional. Everything's on purpose. Like, that shot is in there for a reason.
I don't know.
Do you think there's a reason out there that?
I don't know.
What's your, no. Okay.
I don't know.
Maybe Danny Boyle fought.
I'd love to ask him one day.
Yeah,
maybe Danny Boyle thought it would have been a cool scene, but then realized, oh, we don't have like she kind of dies in that one scene. Maybe we could get her to do some reshoots. Oh, but we only can get her for like 3 minutes. Okay, so
put her back in costume.
Put her back in costume. Just have her awkwardly say, "Oh, okay."
And I also think another message of this movie is it's pro nuclear weapons or pro nuclear.
Technology,
sure. Yeah. Because it saves the day.
Yeah,
And everything gets saved with the nukes. Let's go nukes. More nukes, the better apparently, we are in life.
Apparently, it also allows you to magically be three inches in front of the surface of the sun and not like burn up in an instant.
Wow. Yeah, I know. So I think they were. Your.
I think there's definitely.
I think it's using the most powerful thing in the world.
I mean, it's always a nuke. I mean, asteroids, send a nuke.
Nothing else is bigger. we need to get rid of all
these nuclear bombs, throw them into the sun.
Into the sun.
They're not going to shoot a missile into it and be like, go get a missile.
Right.
Like,
it's always.
It has to be nuclear.
It'll land on the sun in 70 years.
Yeah. He was a patriot.
Right. he's the patriot. Yeah, and then, I think that those were all my.
Yeah,
my thoughts. And anybody else have an idea about any more themes or? All right. So now we come to the part, pretty fun part, where we're like, okay, how can we make this better? How can we make this today? How can we fix this film?
Yeah.
What would you do?
I mean, we all know.
Yeah.
How to fix this film, and that's to remove the second captain.
Yeah.
You know, you could. I've gone through it in my brain a million times of at what part. How do you continue without the captain? And there's a lot of things. You could have the first ship kind of has a trigger mechanism that is unfamiliar and it just automatically turns on or something like that. Mm-hmm. The second ship, you know, somebody accidentally falls into something and turns something on and it breaks away. Like there's tons of different ways. But like, I really think that you could go around the second captain. Like, they start talking about killing other crew members.
Right.
And as like you could have had that conflict and be like, somebody's got to go because we're closer and we're going to run out of oxygen and you have to keep going. And like they could one by one like have to off each other in this crazy circumstance but have worked just as well.
But we can't
love that.
But we can't have Chris Evans become a murderer in this film.
He almost did.
He did
mentally prepare for it.
Yeah.
We can't have that. We'll just have it that the guy killed himself.
At the time, he wasn't like a major, he wasn't Captain America or anything. He was like a supporting actor at that time.
Yeah.
So it was still okay.
Well, we might have the Fantastic Four. This might have been around that time.
It was after this, but that's, I mean, like I said, they could have easily, I mean, after the oxygen goes away, then it just like you could have them. There's a point when Icarus tells them 14 hours before you can't complete normal tasks, 12 hours before you can't, or complex tasks. And then the second one is like normal tasks. It's like you could have had that drama of them like kind of slowly maroon it, like losing their minds.
Yeah. If I could,
that would have been fine.
If I could just add on to a little bit to what you're saying.
Yeah.
Space is scary by itself.
Yeah, for sure.
Like some of the most horrifying deaths are just space related.
Yeah.
I think the scariest one for me was Harvey.
Yeah.
The new captain. The one that replaces
the backup captain.
Yeah. Backup captain. There you go. Yeah. His death, where he's just like freezing, and then like
it's kind of happened in Event Horizon too.
Yep.
Yeah. But that bit where it's like he's still behind the shield. And the second he goes out to the shield, he just disintegrates.
I know.
It's just like, cold. Oh,
just a pop.
What was that Sandra Bullock space movie?
Gravity.
Gravity.
Yeah, gravity is just like, nothing is safe in space is good. It's just terrifying all around.
Absolutely. Gravity's nuts.
I just felt like you don't need a physical antagonist. Space in itself is just as...
Oh, for sure.
Like, even a scene where it's just like, I don't know, maybe some random asteroid comes out and causes problems.
Yeah. Anything. Literally anything.
Like, you could still go to the old spaceship, I think. But yeah, just don't have the captain be in there.
The thing could have been malfunctioned or sabotaged.
I couldn't stop thinking, like, the captain is probably so weak at this point. He's burned to a crisp and everything.
Yeah,
he's probably constantly
falls off his arm.
Yeah.
Like, how is he able to grab Cillian Murphy by the throat and lift him up?
Yeah, I know.
Not burn Cillian Murphy.
Well, the first thing Cillian Murphy does after he goes, you know, shows up and finds him in that room. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Are you an angel?" And he's like, and he stabs Cillian Murphy. Cillian Murphy runs out. Like, he's like, "Full sun." He yells that as he's running out of the room, and he turns on and he goes, "Oh!" And then it's like, "Oh, he survived that?" He like walked out. Like,
how does Max Strong even die in this movie? Does he get a horrible death? I don't remember seeing.
Like, Mark Strong.
Mark Strong.
I guess he blew up.
Yeah, he's just,
we don't see it.
He just goes up with everybody.
So there is no wonder
the last thing they do is they show him just standing at the edge there.
Oh, and apparently gravity is also weird because he's standing on one edge of the cube bomb, and yet they're also like on the other side of the cube. They've fallen down, but yet they're also
straight up,
and it's
they kind of explain that when they say that once they get inside the sun, it bends space time, so there's no, like, it's falling at such a rapid pace that it would, the centrifuge, like, you'd be locked towards the middle.
Okay.
Like the gravitron or something like that.
I don't know. Time is affected by getting close to the sun, but maybe.
I don't know. I'll never get that close. So I can't speak intelligently.
Maybe this adds to that scientific inaccuracies that article that I found on YouTube. On Wikipedia, I should say.
Hmm. So my thing is, the crew, they're supposed to be the best.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But like one little thing and everything falls apart. Like the guy doing the numbers, human element and everything goes apart.
I messed up.
You know, and then so I'm like, were they really the best? Like, they weren't.
Well, maybe Icarus won.
That's more realistic than anything else. Like, somebody, human error. It's he
I like it.
His response to it, like, and the way he reacts to it, is that felt real.
Yeah,
like,
that's
like, I can't believe I just missed this. How did I miss this?
He forgot the shield by 1% of an
angle. Yeah, he didn't reset the shields to go back down. And he even says, he's like, I was quantum physics and all these different things in my head. I didn't think of
one little thing
of the basic.
Oh yeah,
of the basic element of the whole thing.
But like, then
reset the shield.
But then suddenly he just becomes suicidal.
Yeah, he knows he. That's like that's the thing.
The gravity of the whole thing.
The psychology, the pressure mentally on you to not mess up.
Yes,
right.
Is
that? And then they even had a person there to watch their mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they still went crazy.
And the psychiatrist was the most obvious one who was going crazy,
and he was. Yeah,
he was right doing the same thing that the captain was
right from the beginning. Yeah,
he's supposed to prevent people from going crazy.
Well, that's
one question I have that I don't know if it's fixable or like they put Mace puts Kappa.
Yeah,
in the suit. Remember in Icarus One, and he wraps himself with Murph. With Harvey, right?
Yeah,
they wrap themselves, and they're we're gonna Event Horizon over to the other ship,
right?
And they use kind of like something exploding to kind of give them propulsion to get over there.
Now blow later, the hatch.
Now later on, okay, and I think I just figured out why it didn't work. Now later on, Kappa's in a suit, but then he's got boosters to get from the ship to the payload ship at the end.
I think he might have also been strapped in.
He propels himself.
In the
end part, so like he could have used boosters.
I don't think he needed to. I think the whole thing was that it was going to shoot you fast enough to get over that he probably wouldn't need to use them.
Didn't need to use the boosters?
No, I would imagine. That's what I'm going to tell myself.
I would have helped. I mean, it would have helped him, like, because we lost Harvey.
Yeah, we but he like, looked up and found Harvey was like floating away. It's like he wasn't going after him. He's like, fuck it. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, he looked up and he was like, oh, well.
At the speed he's going.
This solves that problem.
We're not going to 2001 this. We're not going to go get his body.
Hey, right, we need the oxygen. Let's just, we didn't see that.
So he could grab Chris Evans fast enough and pull him back in, but there's no way he was going after him.
Plus the cold. Then, like he's, if you were to go after him at that point, he'd probably die of the cold anyway.
Right.
And frostbite all over the place. Mm. But then another thing, they were all about like the sanctity of life and trying to get that crew from Icarus One. But then as soon as their lives were in danger, it was like all you know, everyone for themselves.
Sure.
Let's start hacking people. Let's start killing people. It's like it wasn't consistent. Like they changed too fast. There wasn't enough. Like, but you know, that's not really a big thing. And I understand.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think their position at that point was just like, oh, everything's going fine for us. Yeah. We got plenty of supplies and things like that to spare.
Yeah.
Oh no! Now we've lost everything. Okay, everyone, get out your weapons. We're going to solve this. As best we can, we're just gonna kill it. We're just gonna kill whoever we can find.
Yeah, we're just gonna have to. That sounds.
Here, everyone, get out of your
That position. You just kind of react.
Has anyone ever seen The Killing of a Sacred Deer?
Yes.
I just thought of that ending scene. You know, the one where he has to.
Yeah, he's got to pick. Oh,
boy. Everyone, close your eyes.
Yeah.
Don't look.
And he's circling, and then. Well, okay, you got the right person. Yeah. all right. Any last thoughts on this film?
No, I mean. Like I said, it's I love it, regardless of its flaws. I wish I could watch it on a big screen again.
Mm-hmm.
Like watching it at home, you know,
doesn't do it justice.
Like it really doesn't.
I
like,
know
the
especially now
the enormity of the movie. Like there's some movies that are just meant for a big screen, and that's one of them.
Yeah,
right.
I watched this on my iPad.
Pure dark, loud music, loud sounds,
surround sound.
Yeah,
like, yeah, IMAX or whatnot.
Yeah,
like but it not 3D.
Definitely put you into place for sure.
Don't need 3D.
No.
I feel like I have been making fun of this movie, but
yeah.
I will say this: this is nowhere. This is leagues above Battlefield Earth.
Absolutely.
My
goodness.
This is such like good quality. It's like a guy actually wanted to make a vision, and he had the talent to do it. Despite my certain problems with the film, I still feel like it's definitely a movie worth watching.
Absolutely. And my thought is, I wish I would have saw this in the movie theater. I wish somehow the marketing got to me. It missed me. I feel like I missed the boat on this.
maybe we'll rent a theater.
I missed the Icarus on this one.
Though I will say the fact that I didn't know anything about this movie.
Yeah.
Like I knew nothing. I knew nothing about it. So going in and just like having being completely blank other than just knowing, you know, Cillian Murphy's in it and Danny Boyle is directing and just experiencing the movie for myself compared to other films where it's like I do know the plot going in. This is just so good. So it feels so good to just experience a film with no like bias towards it at all.
Watch
Funny Games next.
My final thought is I think they had a opportunity here to tell an original story.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry I'm going to say this, but I think they kind of took the easy way out by going with like classic Hollywood type filmmaking with like a monster at the end with the slashing.
I agree.
I think had an opportunity to kind of like break new ground. And if they weren't going to get the wide world release anyways, they're kind of making an independent film.
Yeah.
They should have just went to 400 and gave us like a kind of like a more newer original experience.
I agree. Mm-hmm. You know, one day I really hope that I can ask Danny Boyle why they went with that, or Alex Garland, and ask them, you know, why use the monster? Why bring the bad guy into it?
Why was that
already scary enough?
Like, the third act is, yeah.
Plus, this is 10 years after Event Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's things that are very, very similar to Event Horizon. Like, I feel like you wouldn't want to do that on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But
right. Are you trying to I don't know. Like, Event Horizon gave us a new experience.
Event Horizon is the scariest movie I've ever seen in my life.
110% behind you on that, Ryan.
Yeah. That movie that scared me more than any other horror film I've ever seen.
I was traumatized. Days after I can do this right now.
Yeah.
It freaks me out just doing it with the hands.
Accent face.
Oh my goodness.
The scariest movie I ever saw was Johnny Got His Gun.
Okay.
It's not a horror movie. It's not a horror movie, but the subject matter is genuinely terrified me. Yeah.
So we kind of segued into our recommendations, our final segment. So
Go ahead.
Recommendations
from this movie. Like, if you like,
Event Horizon, obviously. Yeah. You know, Interstellar, Gravity. You know, they're all in the same kind of vein. But honestly, like, Danny Boyle hasn't missed too much. Mm. Most of his films are very entertaining and they're fun, you know, in different ways. Obviously, Slumdog Millionaire is brilliant, and Trainspotting is brilliant, and 28 Days Later is a blast.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, even Splice is fun in parts, and so is...
He did Splice?
Or not Splice. My gosh.
Okay, he has Trainspotting, A Life Less Ordinary.
With Rosario Dawson and James McAvoy.
The Beach, 28 Days
Later. The Beach is great.
Oh, The Beach is awesome.
28 Days Later, Millions, Sunshine, Slumdog Millionaire, Aliens, Love Triangle. No, that's a short film. 127 Hours.
Yeah.
Trance,
thank you. Yeah. It's Splice, Trance, whatever. It's something that sounds like that. And Trainspotting 2, obviously, was all right. But, I mean, yeah, you know, I enjoy his films. And, you know, it's crazy to look at that cast and see how big all those guys have got. Like, they're all huge stars now, most of them. Yeah, so those ensembles like that are always fun to see kind of develop into something bigger.
So, yeah, for my recommendations, it's, as I was kind of saying, there's so many Stuck in Space films where things are going wrong, where everything is just going wrong, like Cloverfield Paradox, you know, Event Horizon. You got Alien. Mm. Like, I was thinking of Alien for a certain point.
Alien, is that new? I've never heard of that.
Not Alien, but Aliens, because the missing colonists. What's going on? Let's go find out.
Okay. I mean, stuck in a spaceship. Mm-hmm. Stuck in a spaceship. I'm primarily thinking of Stuck in a Spaceship.
Okay. Is that kind of like Prometheus? Is that the same thing?
Oh, 2001. I mean, I think 2001: A Space Odyssey is like the go-to example of things going wrong. I guess not Interstellar, but to me, something that I just thought of, like, if I were to recommend something. I mean, it's not stuck in a spaceship per se, but it is The Martian.
Yeah.
It's like, instead of everything going wrong, you know, things go wrong, but there,
but it gets out.
Matt Damon fixes it. Yeah. Damon's able to fix it.
I get so mad at The Martian because in the book is so much math, and she's like, they didn't do half the math that was in the book. And I'm like, yeah, why? How would that be entertaining?
Exactly. All right. And my recommendation is, if you like, you know, close-knit crews having to make tough decisions. A couple of movies come to mind. Memphis Belle earlier on. And then include space. We're talking Space Camp. Let's end on a high note with that. Let's check out Space Camp. Stuff goes wrong in space.
Wow. Mm.
Or get shot in the space.
What was that, John? What was
that? Accident.
What was
it? On accident.
Forever.
What was the John Carpenter movie? Like, it was first film where it's like Dark Star or something? What was that?
I don't know. And then I had one. Oh, and Armageddon. Yeah. I think a lot of this could be like Armageddon. And I don't know. Anything. What was the one with Brad Pitt that just came out?
Ad Astra.
Ad Astra was kind of like the only movie I can think of where, like, we have a plan. I have a plan.
Yeah.
And the plan actually gets executed. You know what I mean? It actually happens. There's no like detour. There's kind of like that place on Mars a little bit of fighting.
Yeah.
But like, he actually accomplishes his mission
that
he set out to do. There was no like...
Yeah, I fell asleep during it.
I know. It was a little boring. I know. That's why probably they have these hiccups.
Yeah.
Because if you have a mission and it goes perfect, we fall asleep.
Yeah, exactly.
I fell asleep watching 2001: A Space Odyssey the first time going, but... Yeah,
but there's complications in that.
Oh yeah. No, I'm just like, you know, we're first time experiencing it. You might not know what to expect, and sometimes, you know, it needs time to pick up, or it needs time to get to where it's going.
I fall asleep at the bone in the sky.
Is that like the first scene?
Yeah, I'm out.
Oh yeah, but somewhere around that time.
We're gonna do that next week. That's a little tease. Okay, cool.
What's next week?
2001: A Space Odyssey.
Oh, it's not a tease. It's just talking.
I'm gonna tell you. Yeah.
Okay, so no tease, I guess.
No tease. There it is.
Okay.
No guest tease?
No.
Do we want to talk about things we're watching?
Now, what are you watching there, Ryan?
What am I watching now?
Mm-hmm. Or reading or playing or anything. Anything you want to recommend.
What am I watching now? Now I am... Arrival, which was on Apple TV, which
very
was,
good.
Was
Ooh, very good.
Good.
Very good.
That just finished up. What is
anything?
Yellow Jackets on Showtime. I'm watching, which is awesome. It's really good, and it's a it's a bunch of girls from the '90s that they had a big crush on Christina Ricci, Juliette Lewis. Like, it's a lot of fun to watch. I just crushed Succession that third season.
Cool.
During COVID, my COVID thing, I watched that. Looking forward to seeing, oh my gosh, why is it escaping?
What's it about? What's it about?
It's just the Night of the Dog, or I think it's called. It's brand new. But anyways, I can't remember what it's called. I don't know. I watch the same stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I watch, Arrested Development every night.
What's you? Like, the Arrested Development is you?
Yeah.
I'm right 100% behind you. 110%.
Well, obviously, I'm now that I work in documentary films, I'm trying to watch a ton of documentary films and stuff. And,
right.
And trying to find
and absorb,
the voice I want to use for the project I'm doing and the other project I'm doing. Watching series and stuff like that. But yeah, all over the place. I just read, obviously, I'm still tremendously into music because that's my background. Yeah. I just read a book called Sell Out by Dan Ozzie, which was awesome.
Cool.
Highly recommend it. And just about the early 2000s, emo. Yeah, I'd say emo. Yeah. Emo scene.
You were in bands, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You were a drummer, right?
Still am. And but the 90s, the late 90s to early 2000s emo scene, mm-hmm. how a lot of those bands signed to major labels and flopped, mm-hmm. or some of them took off and got huge.
Yeah.
With punk and emo. But yeah, so it's a lot about those records that kind of blew up on major labels. And then I read The Bad Religion autobiography, which is really good.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. Do what you want.
I got to check that out.
I have it. You can read it if you'd like.
Oh, sweet.
I have it in my office.
Oh, nice. I got to yes.
But yeah, I don't know. I try to submerge myself in as much as I possibly can at all times.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You were talking about watching new documentaries and all these things like that. There's this documentary I've been wanting to watch that's about the making of the movie The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yep.
I don't remember quite what it's called, but it's just like that. The making of that movie was a train wreck. It was an absolute
Most
disaster.
Most movies are.
Yeah. But well, like this one is especially bad.
Yeah.
There's so much crazy stuff that happens behind the scenes that I've heard from other people. It's just like, oh my God, that happened, and then this happened. And, so that's something I want to watch. I'll name it if I can find it. But recently, just the only new thing I've watched is Smiling Friends. It's if anyone ever watched YouTube in the early days of YouTube and Newgrounds, it's from animator Psychic Pebbles and Michael Cusack, who kind of came in around 2011. And it's all about people going out into the world and trying to make people smile. You know, people who are sad, but unfortunately, those people are suffering from real life stuff like depression and stalkers and things like that. And it's just these guys have to try and make them smile, despite the fact that it's really hard to make these people smile.
Right.
It's legitimately one of the funniest shows I've seen this year. I've seen in a while, actually, and I'd recommend it. But it's also probably not everyone's cup of tea.
Very cool.
Power of the Dog is the name of that movie.
Power of the Dog?
Yeah, it just won Golden Globes. I just realized it just won a bunch of Golden Globes. That's where I saw it. So.
Okay. Let's see here.
Golden Globe Awards that all Hollywood kind of bypassed, and they still gave away awards for some stuff.
What's Doctor Strange's, the real guy who plays Doctor Strange?
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, he's got a new movie.
Power of the Dog.
No. No.
That's the Western.
So. No, not the Western. He did. I just watched this thing on Amazon, The Courier. I'm sorry. The Courier. Yeah, if you're into like Cold War sci-fi, I'm not sci-fi, Cold War spy thrillers, this is a true story on how kind of like we found the bombs in Cuba. Anyways.
Cool. I found the documentary I was talking about.
Okay.
Lost Soul, The Doomed Journey of Richard Stanley's Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah. Very cool.
Definitely not a mouthful.
You seen Lost in La Mancha?
No.
The one about Don Quixote and Terry Gilliam? No?
No, no, not
okay.
Yet.
We saw it in...
I maybe have watched that.
Yeah, if you're in the...
I think I've watched that.
Drink.
Yeah, that was an Amazon thing, wasn't it, I think?
No, that was out a long time ago.
Oh.
Yeah. It's when he was trying to make the movie and all his problems. Because he's got the characters all old.
But I think it was on Prime. Like, I think it released on Prime.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. Very cool.
Anyways.
And then I watched Hamilton again.
Yeah.
The play, you know, on Disney Plus. And then, like, man, not
throwing
I don't
away
know.
My shot.
Oh, my gosh. This song's been stuck in my head for days. And then it led me to watch Johnny Tremaine. It's like an old Disney, like 1940s, I don't know, 50s type Disney movie.
Yeah. Let me give you a, can I tell you a quick story about Hamilton?
Absolutely.
I saw Hamilton on Broadway. We were, my wife and I, lucky enough to have a friend who worked at the Met, and she would get tickets.
Yeah.
So we saw like not Lin-Manuel Miranda had just left.
Okay.
But it was half of the guys were still there.
So good.
His understudy was now Hamilton. And we saw it in the Richard Rodgers Theater. And after that, I was like, it literally sparked something in me that was like, I have to create stuff. I'm on the right path. I have to keep doing this.
That's what I got out of it as well.
I've done, you know, to get to where I'm at, like I've worked really hard and done the right things. And it's like, I use that as like a jump off point, right in the middle. I was like right about to finish, school. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, that was it, man.
That's amazing stuff.
My kids now, I try to watch it with them, and they're like, yeah, it's boring, Dad. Where's the king? When does the king come out?
The king.
And the best part about, we didn't have Jonathan Groff. We had Taron Killam.
Oh.
Who was I mean,
it's great.
SNL. Like, he's like a hilarious comedic actor, and him as the king was just like, it was perfect. I wish there was, there's no video of him as king anywhere, but he was so good.
I loved it. I watched it the first time it was here.
Yeah.
So I had to wait years.
Yeah.
Years. I watched a PBS special and I didn't want to get spoiled. I didn't want to listen to the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Years I had to wait. And I finally saw it. I was like bawling.
Yeah.
The stage was turning. I was like, this is so inventive. So we could do a whole podcast on just that.
Oh, for sure.
But absolutely love it. That and Wicked are my two favorite. I can't get enough of them.
That was fun.
So Hamilton, I watched it. I was
highly recommend it, Roger.
Roger, you have to watch it.
And I would, if I were to recommend any musical, I'd recommend the Book of Mormon.
Oh well, yeah.
Yeah, well, of course you do it.
That's brilliant. I've seen that as well.
Yeah.
I have maggots in my scrotum.
Funny, I watched it just a couple hundred feet away or so in the theaters next door.
Yep, same here.
Same here.
Yeah. And then so I got on a Revolutionary War kick. So I watched this Al Pacino movie called Revolution. I used to watch it on HBO when I was a kid. It's kind of like, I looked it up now and it's like got horrible reviews, but I'm like, this was a good movie. Like high budget with costumes, everything looked legit, dirty. And I recently watched it. And I'm like, okay, so the acting wasn't like great.
Right.
But I mean, it was like one of those movies I would just like watch over and over and over again.
Al Pacino and American Revolution.
Yeah, after Godfather-ish type time. Yeah.
Have you ever seen John Adams?
John Adams?
Yeah, it's like an HBO series.
Yes.
I love that. People have been recommending that, and I got to watch that someday.
Yeah,
It's
not that long of
a
series.
It's on my infinite list of things I need to watch.
Definitely. There's a big list, and I'm sure we're adding to people's list as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I think we're going to wrap it up.
Okay.
Thank you, Ryan, Kelly.
Thanks for having me.
Transition Studios. for sharing everything and bringing this movie to the table.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, I love it. I love the movie. I know I'm hard on it because I want it to be more. That's you know what I mean? I believe in it.
We're going to have to get it into a theater.
I agree. Raj, anything else you want to say?
I lied. This movie's terrible. What the hell, Ryan? This was a terrible watch. I never wanted to work with you again.
Oh, jeez.
Please come back, Ryan. Please.
Yeah, oh, you're
the guinea pig. We're gonna work things out.
I have, you know, when you asked me to do this, and you said sci-fi. And I said, all right.
Yep. Yeah.
And I'm like thinking of what's my favorite sci-fi movie. That, you know, not a lot of my favorite movies are favorite movies of everybody else. I like to think outside of what everybody else.
No,
is thinking.
This is great.
But then, this morning, as I'm thinking about this movie, and I'm just like, And I walk into my office, there's a big poster of my favorite movie in my office, and I'm like, oh my God, that's a sci-fi movie. And I don't really think of it as a sci-fi movie because it's my favorite movie. And so I was just like, why am I not talking about that movie? So
right.
I'll have to come back and we'll have to talk about that.
Yeah.
I could talk about that movie and its sequel for hours.
Don't feel bad. There have been plenty of talks behind the scenes where we discuss what counts as sci-fi.
Yeah, so,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, this is definitely sci-fi. Mm. Yeah. Well, it's actually, now it's kind of reality. But
unfortunately, yeah.
Unfortunately.
And then when we leave today,
yeah,
you're going to have a bunch of thoughts of that, oh man, I should have said that on the podcast.
Yeah.
That's what happens to us all the time. That's what's been happening.
Well, thanks for listening to their podcast. That's what I'm going to say. These guys work really hard at this, so thank you for listening if you made it this far.
All right. With that, we're going to leave you guys wherever you're doing. Just be safe out there. Raj, you got anything to say?
Well, that's it.
Okay.
Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Get back some little.
Yes. Bye.
Our sun is dying. Mankind faces extinction. 7 years ago, the Icarus Project sent a mission to restart the sun. But that mission was lost before it reached the star. 16 months ago, I, Robert Capa, and a crew of seven left Earth frozen in a solar winter. Our payload, a stellar bomb with a mass equivalent to Manhattan Island. Our purpose, to create a star within a star.
We've mined all Earth's fissile materials for this bomb.
We have a payload to deliver to the heart of our nearest star. We're delivering that payload because that star is dying, and if it dies, we die. Everything dies. So that is our mission. There is nothing, literally nothing more important than completing our mission.
There's not going to be another payload.
Even if we knew that some or even all of that crew are still alive, their lives are entirely expendable when seen in the context of our mission.
The one we carry is our last chance.
However, there is something on board the Icarus One that may be worth the detour.
Our last, best hope.
If we had two bombs, we'd have two chances. Besides the tests on deep space, I ran a number of sensory deprivation trials, tested in total darkness on flotation tests. And the point about darkness is, you float in it. You and the darkness are distinct from each other because darkness is an absence of something. It's a vacuum. The question is, does the risk of a detour outweigh the benefits of an extra payload? The total light envelops you.
Kill yourself, man. You got this, okay?
Oh, James, you're foolish!
At least now we know what happened on Icarus One. The same thing that's happening here.
Kappa, I order you to remove that suit.
What are you trying to remind us of? Our lost humanity?
Get out of the suit!
It's different being afraid that you won't make it back home and then knowing that you won't.
Whatever happens, one of us is staying behind.
In the face of this, we are...
Hey, Captain. We're only Stardust.
And through this dust, we will return.
Ashes to ashes. Stardust is Stardust.
an angel.
It is not our place to challenge God.
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 There will be nothing to show that we were ever here but stardust. The last man alone with God. A minor man.
Do it, Captain!
Finish it.
Do it.
Only dream I ever have is the surface of the sun. Every time I shut my eyes, it's always the same.
A stellar bomb is triggered. Very little will happen at first.
And then a spark will pop into existence. It will hang for an instant, hovering in space. And then it will split into two. And those will split again. And again. And again. A detonation beyond all imagining. A big bang on a small scale. A new star born out of a dying one. I think it'll be beautiful. Scared. Just remember, it takes 8 minutes for light to travel from sun to earth, which means you'll know we've succeeded about 8 minutes after we deliver the payload. All you have to do is look out for a little extra brightness in the sky. So if you wake up one morning and it's a particularly beautiful day, you'll know we made it.
Keep up the good work and prevent accidents. This shift is concluded.